The Washington News Bureau of the American Broadcasting Company presents From the Capitol, a public affairs program bringing you an interview with an outstanding public official here in the nation's capital. This is Pete Clapper with John Edwards of the ABC Washington News Bureau. Our guest is Representative Hale Boggs, Democrat of Louisiana and Deputy Whip of the House. He's a member of the House Ways and Means Committee and the Joint Economic Committee. Congressman Boggs, what are the most important issues today?
Mr. Clapper, we have been talking about one today, namely the whole problem of trade policy. With the emerging common market in Europe, the position of the United States relative to Europe changes rather drastically. I would think that the renewal of the trade agreements program or a substitute for the trade agreements program will be one of, if not the top issue in Congress. Of course, we've got tax policies, Social Security, and a great many other things.
Thank you, Congressman Boggs. In a moment, we'll be asking you more about these and other issues. As chairman of the Joint Subcommittee on Foreign Economic Policy, Congressman Boggs today opened hearings on the problem of trade barriers. First to testify was former Secretary of State Christian Herter. Congressman, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Now, here with the first question is John Edwards.
Congressman, your committee is laying the groundwork for this big fight over tariff policy in Congress this year, and so much of it is not understood by the American people. I think it might be good right at the start if you would explain the whole common market setup as you see it.
The common market, in essence, is the beginning of a United States of Europe. We in our country have had a great common trading area since the beginning of our nation. We continue to expand it. When we admitted two states here recently, why, we made it much bigger than it had ever been before. Europe has never had this. The net has been that Germany and England and France and Italy and Belgium and the other countries in Western Europe have been competing with one another for everything. Each country has had to have its own automobile industry, its own steel industry, its own mining industries, and so on. Now, for the first time in modern times, as a matter of fact, since the end of the Roman Empire, Western Europe is united. The reason that there's so much talk about the common market now is that the United Kingdom, Great Britain, is joining the common market. And this means when England goes in, that in the common market countries of Europe, there'll be about 225 million people as compared to 185 million people in the United States. They'll have a trading area about the size of the United States. They'll have a steel producing capacity of about 112 million tons a year as compared to about 100 million tons for the United States and about 75 million tons for Russia. The military, political, economic implications of this, of course, are most significant.
Well, Congressman, President Kennedy has emphasized that one of our problems, in fact, the major problem, is that we must be able to negotiate with the common market for the entrance of U.S. goods into the market. Now, this, I understand, or this obviously is behind the president's plan to ask Congress for a broader tariff-setting authority, and almost every step along the way, there's controversy on this. Is that correct?
Yes, I think it important, Mr. Edwards, that we examine first the authority that we have now under the present trade agreements program.
You mean the Reciprocal Trade Act?
Right. Under that act, the President of the United States, in a given year, can reduce a given tariff on a given item. This means that he could take one thing, like a microphone, or like a pencil that I'm holding in my hand, or the watch that you have there to clock us on, and he can negotiate a reduction of 5% on the existing duty on these articles that I mentioned to you, on an item-by-item basis. Over a four-year period, he can reduce 20% or 5% per annum for 4 years. Well, obviously, this is a very limited authority. Now, when the common market comes into effect, whereas formerly there were tariffs between Germany and France and between England and Germany or any of the other countries that now members of the common market, after the common market is finally operating, there'll be no tariffs between the member nations, but there will be a common tariff around the common market, similar to a tariff that we have in the United States, which is around the United States of America. Now, authority to negotiate with England doesn't mean anything if we don't have authority to negotiate with this new unit. So when the president talks about negotiating with a common market, he's talking about an authority which he doesn't have at all now, you see. And in addition to that, because of the fact that this common market is changing literally thousands of duties which now exist between them and establishing in TAN a common set of duties, we must have broad authority to negotiate not on a pencil and on a piece of paper or a fountain pen, but on items across the board, such as negotiate on chemicals, negotiate on machine tools, negotiate on industrial products of different character, you see? This is what the president's talking about.
Congressman Boggs, what's the aim of, what would be the aim of the president in such negotiations, to lower tariff barriers on incoming and outgoing material from the United States?
Well,
is that the purpose?
The aim, of course, is reciprocity. The aim is to make a concession in return for a concession. The purpose, the policy behind it, is to maintain the export markets of the United States rather than lose these markets, or rather than make it imperative that American capital move behind the common tariffs and invest there and produce what we've been exporting to these areas in those areas themselves.
Now, what will be the result, the short-term result, of the lowering of tariff barriers on some American industries? It's going to be a hardship, isn't it?
Well, let's look at it first from the point of view of what happens to American industries if we're not able to negotiate reductions with the common market. Let me give you a few examples. Today, we send machine tools to all of the countries in Europe, practically, with the exception of Western Germany. Western Germany has a tariff against our machine tools. When the Treaty of Rome finally takes effect,
the treaty that set up the common market.
Right, exactly. There will be a tariff on machine tools which covers Germany, France, Italy, the United Kingdom, Belgium, Luxembourg, and any other members of the common market. This means that whereas we formerly had one tariff to contend with insofar as Germany was concerned, now we have a tariff to contend with insofar as all of the other member nations of the common market are concerned. Now, if we're not able to negotiate with these members or with the common market, then we, in effect, will have lost the entire market that we had in these other countries. Now, I could take other illustrations, both in the realm of industrial products and agricultural commodities in fabricated goods and so on. So that the first thing is that unless we do this, we lose a tremendous export market. Our export market provides jobs, employment, revenues, just as our domestic production provides. Now, the other side of the coin is, what do we give up? This is what you're talking about. Well, again, this is a matter of negotiation. As far as I can see, insofar as the common market is concerned, nothing. The sensitive items that we're confronted with, insofar as imports are concerned, are textiles. We have no competition from Europe in textiles. Most competition in textiles comes from Japan and Hong Kong. Plywood, a sensitive item. As far as I know, no competition from Europe. There are other items that you had some conversation about in the hearings. Flatware, Senator Bush was talking about, cameras. I could name several others. But I see no immediate influx of goods from Europe. We may be confronted with more competition in third country markets, such as Latin America and other places. But we have that competition now. And much of this competition is not only European, but it's competition of American capital invested in Europe selling by way of its subsidiaries in Latin America and elsewhere.
Would you concede, however, that in some specific industries it is possible that there will be hardships, interim hardships, as these industries move to other products which in which they can compete effectively with the common market?
Oh, I think that that's undoubtedly so. There are many types of things that competition affects. Much of this may be just sheer obsolescence. The example is given, of course, of the icebox giving way to the refrigerator, the horse and buggy giving way to the automobile, the ground transportation, the air transportation, and countless other matters of this kind, which are not affected in any way by imports, but which are industries which lose and the other industries gain.
Now, in view of this fact, Congressman Boggs, do you think the government has any responsibility to industries which are hard hit by a reduction in tariffs?
Yes, I do. Although you must remember that the face premise here is that the government has provided a subsidy for these industries. A tariff is a subsidy. A tariff, in effect, interferes with free enterprise. What so many people who profess to believe in free enterprise say is that when you reach a national frontier, then free enterprise doesn't apply any further. You then impose government restrictions and government regulations, either in the form of a tariff or in the form of a quota of some kind. Now, nevertheless, it is so that there are certain industries which have been protected by tariffs for some time. And if they are adversely affected, there's a displacement of capital and of workers, then it's entirely logical and reasonable that the government come in with a program which makes it possible to reinvest the capital and re-employ the workers.
Well, Congressman, you're dealing with, when you deal with trade and tariffs, you're dealing with one of the oldest issues in American politics. And this is not only going to affect businesses and individuals, it's going to affect communities and whole areas in some cases, and that is recognized. And inevitably, you have a terrific political issue here. And there are many people, the so-called protectionists, who are saying now that any plan which President Kennedy will propose to Congress, they expect to defeat. And you acknowledge yourself that this is going to be a big issue this year. So the big thing from your standpoint is going to be a selling job. Is that not true?
Right. No question about that being true.
And it's very complex because you get into all sorts of problems, not just relocation and retraining, but you get into all kinds of problems of unemployment.
You get into all kinds of emotional issues. The word foreign, you know, implies something a long ways away, and it's very easy for a politician, any of us, to talk about foreign this, foreign that, as compared to the man who is living right next door to you, so that the emotions of the thing have to be overcome.
Well, now, the president, of course, has not yet announced the type of plan that he expects to submit to Congress. I think at his last news conference, he said that a tentative decision had been reached, but that he would propose this to Congress early in January. But it is assumed that there would have to be a very strong element of presidential discretion in here, and that's going to be an issue that will be fought tooth and nail in Congress this year. How do you expect to get support for that?
Well, Mr. Edwards, 4 years ago, when the trade agreements program was up for extension, many people said that the most that we could hope for would be a one-year extension of the act as written. We exceeded that by 3 years, time-wise, and insofar as the act itself was concerned, we strengthened the act. We gave the president considerably more power than he had prior to the extension in that year. Now, that was done by awakening the American people to the tremendous stake that they have in trade. Let me give you an example of these things. With the exception of one or two districts in West Virginia and Pennsylvania, almost every congressional district in the United States gains more from trade than it loses. And this would be true if we had complete free trade, which nobody is advocating that I know of. The difficulty about it is that the industry which feels that it's being adversely affected by imports is quite vocal. It makes itself known to its congressmen and its senators. The people who are gaining from exports are not vocal, are not articulate. Last time they became vocal and articulate. In several districts in North Carolina, for instance, the congressman had started out being more or less opposed to the extension of the trade agreements program. When the tobacco farmers came in and pointed out to the men that were representing them that practically the entire crop in these areas was being sold to Japan, and that without Japanese participation, the tobacco farmers who had been prosperous in North Carolina might very well be something less than prosperous, then they became supporters of the trade agreements program. The point I'm making is that if the Americans who have a vital stake in trade, this means both ways, imports and exports, become vocal, I don't think there's any doubt about us passing this legislation.
You know that certain elements of organized labor are very strongly in support of this year. How active do you expect them to be?
Organized labor, by and large, has been quite late to foreign trade and has, by and large, as I said a moment ago, has supported a liberal trade policy. As far as I know, they continue to support a liberal trade policy. I would expect the labor movement to be actively for a liberal program.
Congressman, do you foresee, looking down the long vista of the future, that the United States may someday join this European common market, or
no,
is that too far?
No, I don't see the United States joining the common market. But I do see an Atlantic community very closely tied together. The common market, 10 years from now, will be a United States of Europe. It's just as certain as I'm talking to you. It'll be every bit as strong as the Soviet Union, probably a lot stronger, and it'll be comparable to us. It'll be a tremendously significant political factor on this earth. The United States, I think, will maintain its present political alignments. For us to join the common market would mean making political concessions, which I don't believe our country would make.
I'd like to get on to a different subject now, John, if you don't mind. There's been a great deal of talk, Congressman Boggs, about the crisis in the House leadership. Is it your expectation that Congressman McCormick of Massachusetts will be the new speaker?
Oh, I've never thought that there was any doubt about Congressman McCormick being the speaker. I was asked that question the day that it became known that our late, great, lamented speaker, Mr. Raymond, had cancer, and I said at that time that I felt that Mr. McCormick would be speaker, and I still think so.
The only name that I've seen mentioned as a possible opposition to McCormick's speakership is that of Raines of Alabama, I believe. Do you think he has any chance at all? Is he running for the post?
Well, I've never seen where Congressman Raines has announced for the post. Congressman Raines is one of the ablest members of Congress, as you well know. But number one, as I've said, I've seen no announcement of his candidacy. And number two, I've said that I think that Mr. McCormick will be the speaker.
Now, moving along to the next highest post, that of the majority leadership, Albert of Oklahoma looks like he's the man, but Bowling of Missouri has announced that he will contest this. Have you received any communication from Bowling to this effect? Is he campaigning?
Yes, I received a letter from Congressman Bowling. I did so.
Do you think he has a chance?
Well, I would be the last person in the world to discount any candidate for the office of majority leader. I will say this, though, that Congressman Albert is the acting majority leader. And without taking anything away from Congressman Bowling, the House is one that follows precedent rather frequently. someone says, why don't you abolish the seniority system? And the answer always comes back, well, if you abolish the seniority system, what do you substitute there for? And the great advantage that Congressman Albert has, aside from his ability and his and the fact that he is well-liked by the members of Congress, and I'm not taking anything away from Congressman Bowling, is the fact that he is the acting majority leader, and the caucus would have to remove him, in effect, and I don't think they're going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Congressman, just another point. I heard a remark made this afternoon that Speaker Rayburn's influence was going to be felt around here for a long time to come in many, many ways. In fact, the expression was used that this is a form of Rayburn fallout. What comment will you have?
Well, I would certainly agree that Speaker Rayburn's influence will be felt here for many years to come. It'll be felt in the hearts and in the minds of the members of Congress who have served here with him. Mr. Edwards, one of the magnificent things about our system of government is this transmission of our institutions from one man or one group of men to another man or another group of men. Now, Speaker Rayburn's great attribute was his profound respect for the House of Representatives as an institution. And that will live, in my judgment, with the members of this Congress as long as it's an institution. In addition to that, he had a concept of the speakership, which was certainly anything but that of Speaker Cannon. He didn't seek to be a dictator. Yet he sought to persuade. He sought to lead by persuasion. And I think this type of thing will be translated and transmitted to the new leadership in Congress. I could go on with many other illustrations, but I shan't. The point I make is that what you said about Speaker Rayburn is quite accurate.
To make it this point another way, it has been reported quite frequently that the administration expects to have more difficulty in putting its program through the House of Representatives without the influence than the stabilizing influence of Speaker Rayburn. Do you feel that this is true?
Well, it's always difficult to replace a great man. On the other hand, new leaders arise. The very fact of Speaker Rayburn's greatness, in a way, cut down on the effectiveness of would-be leaders. This gives them a real opportunity in the upcoming session of Congress. So my answer is that I think there will be effective leadership.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, I have to interrupt now. Thank you, Congressman Boggs, for being our guest on From the Capitol. Each week at this time, the Washington Bureau of ABC News presents this program, an interview with one of the outstanding public officials here in the nation's capital. Our guest today was Congressman Hale Boggs, Democrat of Louisiana. This is Pete Clapper with John Edwards, ABC, Washington.